Shalom Aleichem, on behalf of Teach 613, we welcome you to take 10 for Talmud. Baba Basra Kuf Nun Ches, Baba Basra 158a, pagination is 315. We'll start from the Mishnah in the beginning of the Daf. Nafal HaBayis Alov Ve'al Ishto. We're discussing a number of cases of tragedy. A house caved in and killed the occupants. In this case, it fell upon him and his wife. So both husband and wife are now dead, but the question is, who died first? Now, in some contexts, we discuss who died first, in that if the woman dies first, there is no payment of ksuba to her, because she died first. Husband was there, willing, so to speak, to continue the marriage and support her. She died. It's over. The case of ksuba is where the husband died first and money is owed to the woman to support her, to set her up. There's a ksuba payment from the estate to the woman. And that's the topic that we normally think of when we wonder, did he die first? Did she die first? Who's going to die first? And how is it going to play out to the point that there's such a transaction that the woman can sell her ksuba to people who would pay a discounted rate because they're not sure. Is she going to die first and there'll be no payment? Or will he die first and there will be a payment and they'll get the payment because that's what they bought? The futures, so to speak, is a speculation. They're able to purchase it. And that's normally what we discuss, he or she. In our topic, though, we're dealing with the topic of Yerusha, inheritance. If she died first, then the husband inherits her. That's the rule, that a husband inherits his wife who dies if they are indeed still married at the time of her passing. Conversely, if he died first, then she became an unmarried woman. And when she does die, even if it's just minutes later, but she's an unmarried woman, and her inheritors, her family, would inherit. Rashbam points out, Ve'ein la banim imenu. We're talking in a case where she does not have any children, particularly from him, but doesn't have any children, because if she had children, those children would be the inheritors before anybody else stepped in. Our case is she does not have children, and either the relatives of the husband will get her assets, because upon her passing, it went to the husband, and then, I guess a few minutes later, he passed, and it goes to his inheritors, or the reverse order occurred. He died first, she became unmarried, and the result is that her biological relatives, the relatives of her maiden family, are going to be the inheritors. So how do we handle this? We don't know who died first. Yarshei habaal omrim isha mesa rishon v'achakech mesa bal. The inheritors of the husband claim that the woman died first, the money went to the husband, and then he died, and they're the ones to inherit. Yarshei ha'isha omrim, the inheritors of the woman say, Baal meis rishon, the husband died first. V'achakech meis ha'isha, and then the woman died, and therefore the money goes to us, her maiden family. So the ruling here is, Beishamei omrim yachloku. Beis Shammai say they should divide, because it's a standard type of case, mamon multa besafek, money that's in a questionable state. We have no idea where to allocate it. So we should allocate it by a division between the parties. That's not the way we paskin. O Beis Hillel omrim, Beis Hillel say, which is the way we paskin, that we divide the shaila into categories, and we're always going to follow the concept of muhsuk, who is holding the property. Now, this can sometimes get confusing. Who really is holding the property? You have a joint venture, a marriage. She has assets. Some of those assets literally become the husband's, and the husband simply has to take responsibility to pay up their value upon death or divorce. But the property really becomes his. On the other hand, there's property that's totally not his. He just gets to use it. How do we handle the different categories of asset? And then, of course, there's the ksuba, which has not yet been paid. So this entire question is reminiscent of a question I believe we discussed on a different session of a partnership dissolution where they had bookcases, for example, and there are different claims that abound. Some partners may claim that the money used to buy the bookcases many years ago was joint money from the partnership. Some may claim that it was bought by one partner or the other. Some may say everybody bought the furniture that's in their particular office. That's their recollection. Over 10, 20, 30 years, it could be that furniture was swapped between the offices. When things were going well, no one thought of dissolution. So sometimes it's very nice to say whoever's the muhsik gets the property, but it becomes confusing. Who is the muhsik? So Beis Hillel says, Nechasim b'cheskason. The property should follow the chazaka. Let's finish the mission and then we'll go back. Kisuba b'cheskas yoshe habal. Kisuba, and of course, tosefes ksuba, anything that's added into the ksuba, that's all considered the husband's property. The wife's family would have to prove that he died first and the money is payable. Otherwise, what you're doing in the case of ksuba is you're collecting from the husband's estate. So you have to prove the collection. Otherwise, they don't have to pay. The property that comes and goes, that's going to go to the woman's father's family, her biological family. That's referring to nichsei malug, the property that comes in with her. The husband has the rights to use the property and produce from it, but fundamentally it's hers. And therefore she, her family, are considered the muhzakim on that. And in a case of doubt, they retain that property. Going back to the original phrase of Beis Hillel, Nechasim b'cheskason, the property is in its chazaka, that's referring to Nechse Tzon Barzel. Tzon Barzel is iron sheep. It means something that's very steady in finances. We've steadied it. And what happened is that this property, upon being brought in, the husband basically bought it. He writes down its value and it becomes his. He can do what he wants. When she goes out of the marriage, death or divorce, he's going to pay that value with which it was assessed. So the ruling on Nechsei Tzon Barzel, Beis Hillel says, is Nechasim b'chezkason. Turning over to Amud Beis, we have three understandings of what that means. We paskin like the third explanation, which is found on the third line. Rav Shimon ben Lakish, Mishum bar Kapara Omar, Yachloku, they divide it. Why is Nechsei Tzon Barzel divided and considered Becheskason, that both of them have an equal active claim to that property? So Rashbam explains that she has a chazaka because this is what she brought in the marriage and it was firmed up that she's entitled to that payment. Vahu, and he's considered a muhsik, he, his family, mituch shei kibel achrayus alav konan, because he accepted responsibility for it, it's as if he bought it. It's as if it became his. Varehen kimamono, it's as if it's his money. And therefore, if you want to extract from him, you have to prove it. And that's why it's becheskasan. Each of them have a claim that it's in their possession, and therefore it's yachloku. They should divide it. Yoshe Koach, thank you for joining.